Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding, is now in session.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Marguerite Cashman, appellant, versus Derek Van Dyke, appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Casey Bridgman, an attorney from Wessington Springs. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Richard Travis and Ms. Lindsay Edwards from Sioux Falls. Mr. Travis, I understand you'll be presenting this morning?
That's correct.
All right. Very well. Mr. Bridgman, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court, Counsel, Clerks, and Mr. Cashman, who is representing his mother, Marguerite Cashman, and to Mr. Van Dyke, who is present today, and to the audience. May it please the Court. I have the privilege of arguing the case of Cashman versus Van Dyke. Facts are relatively straightforward. On October 12, 2007, Derek Van Dyke's house exploded. The explosion caused a fire. The fire led to other houses, and two other houses were burned down as a result of that explosion and fire. My client, Marguerite Cashman's house, was burned down, and all the contents of that house were lost, as well as the house itself. Facts are undisputed. Derek Van Dyke owned the house. Derek Van Dyke lived in the house. Derek Van Dyke had control of his house. Derek Van Dyke was lighting the pilot light at approximately 5:30 in the morning, a.m. of October 12, 2007.
What's the evidence that supports that argument?
The evidence that supports that argument is that Jerry Vandenover was at the post office at about 5:30 a.m. He heard the explosion, went to the scene, and found Derek outside in the street. The first thing Derek says to Mr. Vandenover is, Mr. Vandenover asked Derek, "What happened?" And the first thing that Derek says was, "It blew up." And he continued, "I should have waited. I should have waited to light that thing until Schultz could take a look at it." So I think the facts are, Justice Wilbur, is that the fact that Derek admitted that he had lit that pilot light, and it was in conjunction with what happened, and it was at 5:30 a.m. in the morning, so shortly before that, the inferences from those facts would indicate that Derek had lit that pilot light.
But the only testimony in the record was that it was lit at the previous evening, correct?
The testimony of Derek Van Dyke, pursuant to depositions in another case, were that he lit the pilot light at 9:05 or somewhere on October 11th, the previous evening. Appellant would argue that Derek would not have, in the heat of the moment, under horrible conditions of being burned and in pain, the first thing he said was, "It blew up and I should have waited to light that thing." If that was the case, he would have said, "I shouldn't have lit that thing the previous evening." The connotation is that it was lit that morning.
Mr. Bridgman, no matter what time it was lit, what is your factual allegation of negligence?
One, we're asking for a res ipsa.
Right, that's another theory.
Okay.
I'm talking about negligence.
Okay.
We'll get to that, I'm sure. What's the first? What actions are you saying were negligent, and what facts support that?
We're saying that because of the fact that Derek had control of the house and has control of all of the knowledge regarding this case, we're somewhat limited in being able to find out what happened. And so again, I go with res ipsa, but we also argue negligence, and we believe that there are indications of negligence in this case. So what are the facts? One, the fact that Derek admitted to lighting the pilot light and admitted that he should have waited to have a professional light that pilot light.
How is that negligent?
The fact that he had never from the record, he had not lit that in the past, at least in 2005 and 2006. He had always had a professional come and light that.
Well, look, people light pilot lights every day. So what negligence was it? I don't see the expert that said he did it in a negligent way, or that it could even be inferred that he did it in a negligent way. You don't have any expert testimony to that effect, do you?
The CHS case, the case involved some warnings, and the warnings indicated that in lighting a pilot light, you should call and ask for help. If you're going to do it yourself...
Well, don't people light pilot lights by themselves every day?
Probably they do. They do. They light pilot lights every day. But Derek didn't. Derek didn't light pilot lights every day. Derek didn't do it in 2005. Derek didn't do it in 2006. He always had someone else do it. The gas company indicated that when there's an interruption of service or, we're starting the fall season and it's cold, people come in and light the pilot light. And a professional comes in and lights a pilot light. But again, we're not denying that our evidence is sparse. The evidence that we have is that he was lighting the pilot light. Why did this happen? It blew up because I was lighting the pilot light, and I should have waited. And I believe that is an inference from those facts that he did something that was wrong or could have been wrong that related to the explosion.
Is there any difference whether it's lit at 9:30 at night or 5:30 in the morning as far as your claim of negligence?
I believe there is, because if it was lit at 9:05 the previous evening and it burned the whole night or heated the house the whole night and then exploded, then I wouldn't think that there would be something that Derek did that immediately related to the explosion.
At the end of the day, if you get to a jury, what are you going to tell the jury he did that was negligent when he lit the light?
Well, we're going to ask that.
What should he have done differently about the way in which he lit it? What should he have done differently?
We're going to ask one Justice Zinter for an instruction that says that there's an inference that he was negligent because this was under his control, because houses don't normally explode unless somebody did something wrong, and because there were damages that resulted from this explosion. So we're going to ask for an inference of negligence. And we're going to argue to the jury that by the admissions of Derek and by his discussions with his father, that those inferences lead to the fact that he did something wrong. We have to remember, Derek goes...
I've got to stop you right there. Did something wrong. What is something? What's the what? What did he do wrong?
Lit the pilot light when there was maybe a pooling of the gases. Lit the pilot light when there was possibly the smell of propane in that basement where he lit the pilot light. His father, when Derek goes to the hospital, his father, Jan Van Dyke, confronts Derek and says, "Why did you light that? Why didn't you wait?" The evidence is they had discussed this the night before. And his father said, "Why didn't you wait? Why did you light the pilot light? I told you not to light that thing." Again, I believe that there's at least an inference that there was something wrong with that pilot light, that there was something wrong with the fact that it had never been lit by Derek before.
Well, my father didn't always agree with what I did, and it didn't necessarily make it negligent. Might have, but again, what is a father saying he did wrong?
The father's saying he lit that pilot light after a summer of the pilot light not being lit, when we're starting this all up again, when he had never done this before, when he had always had a professional come and light it, and he told Derek not to do that. And my father told me many times I did things wrong. And again, if that's all there was, but it was specifically in regard to lighting the pilot light. It was specifically in regard to, you shouldn't have done that thing. We just talked about that last night. You should not have lit that. So the evidence that we have is that the pilot light was lit early that morning, at least if all favorable inferences are for the non-moving party, in this case Marguerite Cashman, at least a favorable inference is that it was lit at 5:30 in the morning. At least a favorable inference is that something was wrong with lighting that pilot light, because Derek never did it before, because his father told him not to do it, and he confronted him about it at the hospital after he had been burned so badly from the explosion. And a favorable inference is from Derek admitting, you know, in the street, being badly burned, in response to a question of what happened, he says, it blew up, and why did it blow up? Because I lit that and didn't wait for a professional to come and do it. In this case, I hit a little bit on this, but I believe the best case that Marguerite Cashman has is the res ipsa doctrine. I believe the second best case she has is negligence, and the third best case is strict liability. In res ipsa, there's no doubt. I mean, Derek was in control and management of that house and of that propane fire. He admitted to that. He owned the house. He lived in there, and he admitted to lighting it.
Doesn't it have to be a dangerous instrumentality, though, within his control, too?
I don't believe so for res ipsa. I think for strict liability, it has to be a dangerous instrumentality. Okay.
So that's why you're saying your res ipsa argument's a little stronger.
It's stronger.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
So I don't think there's any question or any doubt that Derek had control of the instrumentality that caused this explosion. So that's the first element of res ipsa. The second element is that something occurred that does not normally occur according to our common knowledge and experience unless someone has been negligent. And third, the damages result from that. So the instrumentality is the house or the propane furnace. Our common knowledge and experience is houses don't explode, furnaces don't explode unless there's been some type of negligence. And third, that the damages resulted from this explosion. So I just don't believe that there is any doubt that res ipsa should apply. In regard to the second element,
would we be setting a standard then that basically any time there's a propane explosion, res ipsa applies?
I believe under the facts of this case, when there's an explosion, yes, that res ipsa would apply in a case such as this.
Where it's in control of one party.
Exactly.
Should have added that in fairness. Okay.
Exactly. What Marguerite Cashman is asking is that she have her day in court. You know, just because there's an inference of negligence, I mean, the cases, there's all kinds of cases that say just because there's that inference doesn't mean the trier of fact is going to decide for Marguerite Cashman. The defendant has a right to and should bring forth evidence of an explanation of why this occurred. And in this case, this is what I believe the trial court did wrong. They did not require Derek Van Dyke to bring forth any evidence.
Does that shift the burden then? Does it make the defendant have to prove that they're not negligent?
Well, there's some disagreement in the cases that I read regarding whether this shifts the burden, and I don't believe it necessarily shifts the burden. I believe the cases seem to indicate that it does not shift the burden, but that it makes a prima facie case out of negligence or an inference of negligence, and that the defendant has to then provide evidence of some other factor that caused this accident. And again, the trial court found that Marguerite Cashman had to prove this, that she had to prove this case. And because, you know, some of what the justices are asking is that what is the proof of negligence? And the proof of negligence we have is mainly just the circumstances that surround this case and the admissions of Derek and what he told his father. The reason or the theory behind res ipsa, this is from the E.I. DuPont Demers Co. versus Cudd case that was actually cited in the defendant's brief. The reason or theory of the doctrine of res ipsa locator is based in part upon the consideration that as the management and control of the agency which produced the injury is, under the circumstances to which the doctrine applies, exclusively vested in the defendant, plaintiff is not in a position to show the particular circumstances which caused the offending instrumentality to operate to his injury, while the defendant, being more favorably situated, possesses a superior knowledge or means or of information as to the cause of the accident and should therefore be required to produce evidence in explanation. In this case, all the elements of res ipsa apply. The defendant was not required to provide any evidence explaining why he wasn't negligent or what happened. In this case, in the defendant's answer, they indicated a third party had been involved in this, or a third party might be responsible, but they did not bring in anything. They did not provide us the settlement agreement. They did not provide us anything that showed that third party was responsible. And they did not join that party as a defendant in this case.
But neither did you.
Neither did we.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that we did not is because we did not have facts that indicated that third party was responsible. Again, in these circumstances, all of the knowledge, all of the information as to the cause of the accident is in the defendant's possession. And so we could have sued the person that built the house. We could have sued the person that sold Derek Van Dyke the house. We could have sued the gas company. We could have sued all kinds of people. But I probably would have gotten in trouble that under Rule 11 because I had no facts which indicated that any of those persons had a responsibility. All the knowledge of those persons that had a responsibility was in the hands of the defendant. I did want to touch on, you know, we've got some cases that talk about producing evidence, and some cases indicate that you can produce too much evidence of negligence. Well, that's not the case. In our case, we have scant evidence of negligence. But I just want to bring out that plaintiff does not waive the applicability of res ipsa locator by trying to establish specific acts of negligence through introduction of some evidence. So we have some evidence, what Derek said, the fact that he hadn't lit this before, the fact that his father told him not to do it and confronted him about that shortly before or shortly after the accident. But some evidence which does not clearly and definitely establish the exact cause of the injury. And so just because we have some evidence does not mean we waive the doctrine of res ipsa locator. So res ipsa locator I believe, is our strongest position. I believe all the elements are met, and I believe the trial court erred in not allowing us to proceed and require the defendant to produce evidence or an explanation of what happened. I believe that negligence is our second strongest, where this is a jury decision. Let the jury decide. If we don't have enough evidence, that's for the jury to decide, but we certainly have some evidence or some inferences. And third, strict liability. We haven't dealt much with that, and I see my time's growing short. But strict liability, I think Justice Zinter mentioned that we're lighting pilot lights every day. And that was the problem I have with strict liability, is the fact that this is a common practice. However, it's not a common practice when there's the heat's been turned off all summer. It's not a common practice when there's been an interruption of service. That's when the danger is caused. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bridgman. Mr. Travis, you have 20 minutes, sir. Take your water. Lawyers have been known to get a dry throat.
And I do need my water.
Okay.
Good morning, Chief Justice Gilbertson. Good morning, Justices Zinter, Conan Camp, Severson, and Wilbur. Madam Clerk and Clerks, happy Valentine's Day. My name is Dick Travis. Together with Lindsay Edwards, we represent Derek Van Dyke in the case pending before the court today. Mr. Van Dyke is present today. He was very interested in to see how this process worked, and I encouraged him to come, and he certainly wanted to come see how things progressed and just to see the whole process. Mr. Bridgman has laid out the facts, and but for a twist on a couple of facts or representations, I mean, the facts are relatively straightforward. That is that Derek's house exploded because of a propane issue on October 27th, 2007, at approximately 5:30 in the morning. As a result of that explosion, Derek was seriously and severely burned, and fortunately has had a very miraculous recovery. The consequential damages to the neighbors' homes was also caused by that same explosion. Those homes were destroyed because of the fire that, and because of the explosion and the corresponding fires that erupted. The lawsuit that's been commenced by Marguerite Cashman to recover her loss of her home and the contents of that home is premised upon three causes of action, each of which have been addressed by Mr. Bridgman and which have been addressed in the submissions to this court. As I understand it today, Mr. Bridgman is asserting that his, from his perspective, his strongest theory of recovery is res ipsa, followed by negligence, followed by strict liability. The fundamental question, as this court reviews the record before it, is whether Derek Van Dyke has demonstrated that there are no genuine issues of material facts as to those three causes of action. Or alternatively, has Ms. Cashman, when Derek files his motion for summary judgment, then has Ms. Cashman set forth specific facts showing the existence of genuine issues of material fact. And it's my contention that because of that lack of showing by Ms. Cashman, that failure to show genuine issues of material fact, that Judge Erickson was correct when he rendered his order granting summary judgment on all three causes of action. And I noted in Mr. Bridgman's presentation a comment when he was talking about the negligence issue. The evidence is sparse. Well, it sure is.
Now he, if I understand his comments correctly, concedes if the pilot light is lit at 9:30 at night, there may not be any negligence. But at 5:30 in the morning, if that's the time of the lighting, then there is a question of fact. What is your thoughts on that?
One, I'm not convinced that the timing, as to whatever time it was lit, is dispositive of that issue. Because there still has to be a showing of negligence. Simply because, and just for purposes of discussion, because I'm certainly not conceding that it was lit at 5:30, and I'm going to direct you to the record, where I think it shows that the only record before this court is that it was lit at approximately 9:05. But simply because a person lights a pilot light and an explosion occurs, what evidence is that of negligence on the part of the person lighting the pilot light?
So timing for you is a non-issue.
I won't say it's a non-issue. I won't go that far, but I don't think it's the crux of the case. But let's go back to what record you have before you. Review defendant's statement of undisputed material facts, and I believe it's number 2. And in that statement, we specifically refer to Derek's testimony provided via deposition in the underlying CHS case, when he said, I got home early evening on October 26, 2007. My house was cold, got some things organized. About 9:05, I went downstairs, lit the pilot light, came upstairs, engaged the furnace. Furnace kicked in, house warmed up, I go to bed. That's his testimony. Sometime 5:30 in that morning, he hears a sound that he thought was a tree crashing onto his house. Well, that tree crashing onto his house was propane exploding and engulfing his home and his person in flames. That's in our statement of undisputed material facts.
So he says he's not in the basement at 5:30.
That's correct. He's in bed. And that's his deposition testimony, and again, attached to our statement of undisputed material facts, to which the response from the plaintiff was, we have no evidence one way or the other, but we agree that that's Derek's testimony. That was how the plaintiff responded. I contend that establishes the fact that there has been nothing to the contrary. The representation and the reliance by the plaintiff that when Derek is found out in the street in his gym shorts after the explosion saying it blew up, I should have waited for Schultz, can't remember his name, not Sergeant Schultz, but Jim Schultz or someone to that effect. I mean, how does that infer an act of negligence? I mean, it was evident to Derek at that time that the house had exploded. I mean, he's standing there in shards of flesh, already having been burned. He knew what had happened. So, of course, when the first individual shows up, he's going to say, it blew up.
Was there anything about his physical injuries that supports the view of him being at the pilot light at 5:30 when the accident happened?
I find nothing, Justice Wilbur, to support that other than the representation. I believe there was a reference in the plaintiff's brief to the effect that his right shoulder was burned, and maybe a portion of his back that would at least arguably support a contention that he's bending down to light it.
What about his face? Was that burned?
I'm sorry?
Was his face burned?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe the record establishes that, and I'm trying to recall, in our statement of undisputed material facts, I think we made a mistake. We represented that over 80% of his body was burned, but I think it was in reality was, I think Derek had corrected us on that after the fact, that it was over 60%.
Is that an inference? He was in the basement because his face was burned. I don't know how your face gets burned lying in bed, but I do know how, if you're trying to light the pilot light and it goes boom.
Well, the house is engulfed in flames,
okay,
Justice, and that's where I think his body, and again, I frankly haven't visited with Derek in detail as to the consequences of the burns, because
was the house...
I'm sorry.
Was the house completely destroyed, so you get no evidentiary help from it?
The house was completely destroyed, but there was evidence generated in the underlying litigation, or the litigation that was commenced by Derek against CHS. So there was some evidence found to support what happened, or to address it. I'm sorry.
Raisitz was an offshoot of negligence on proof, and part of that is it does not happen if due care has been exercised. How does that play into this? Is this Mr. Bridgman saying, well, explosions like this don't happen if due care has been exercised?
Agreed. But it's the key point there, Justice Severson, is due care having to be exercised by the party who has control, meaning that there's no other explanation for the underlying event but for the lack of due care by the person who has control of the instrumentality, or by the control of the house in this case. And as we set forth in our brief, there's a multitude of reasons or causes for explosions other than being caused by the person who has control of the house. That is a potential cause in theory. But there's a multitude of other potential causes for a house explosion. Gas leaks, furnace failures, you know, propane leaks. And in fact, I would contend that in our common day experience, we pick up the newspaper and we read it, and it says, we read about this incident when Derek's house exploded on October 27th of 2007. I contend that the first thing that we would think of, or a person would normally think of, there must have been a gas leak somewhere. And that's, you don't immediately go to the conclusion or make the assumption that the explosion must have been caused by the person who was residing in the house. I would submit that that's one of the last things that a person would think of as being the cause of the explosion. But I think that that's where the res ipsa argument fails, in my contention, is on what I would call element two. I mean, yes, going through those three elements. Derek had control of the house, the instrumentality that led to the problem, because it was under his control. Element three, that as a result of the accident, in this case explosion, there was corresponding damages to another party. Absolutely. Mrs. Cashman's house burned, as did all its contents. But it's element two, factor two, that the accident, based upon common knowledge, common experience, does not happen if those who have control of the instrumentality had not been negligent. And that's where I come back to the fact that propane explosions, gas explosions, can happen as a result of a multitude of causes.
Is there anything in the record on your client's experience with pilot lights and working with LP?
Not specifically, but there is reference in his deposition testimony, Justice Gilbertson, in the CHS case, that he has lit the pilot light before. But it wasn't developed as to how familiar he is with lighting pilot lights, and, or how frequent he had done so. But the record does establish that he has lit that pilot light before. And again, that's in our statement of undisputed material facts, to which the plaintiff responded. We acknowledge that's his testimony. We don't have anything, we don't have knowledge or information to respond beyond that. So I contend again, that's what the evidence establishes.
You know, I noticed in the circuit court's ruling, the judge said the doctrine of res ipsa can't be applied unless there's, quote, proven negligence, unquote. And I, you know, I'm not sure that's correct. Is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's correct either, Justice Zinter, because I think it's, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Is that material to his decision, or, I mean, he said it in his decision?
I don't think it's necessarily material. I think the conclusion that was reached by Judge Erickson was still the correct conclusion. Res ipsa is not applicable. And res ipsa is, negligence is a component of res ipsa. And I think where just Judge Erickson was coming from was the fact that he had already ruled there was no evidence of negligence, therefore res ipsa can't apply. Now, right or wrong, I think, again, I'll go, or what I would refer you back to is looking at the three elements of res ipsa as to even to apply that principle to this case. I submit that element two, based on this record, has not been met.
Mr. Travis, is there any evidence in the underlying record as to what actions or how someone lighting a pilot light could cause an explosion?
Not that I'm aware of. And I will readily admit, I have not read in detail all the depositions that were generated in the CHS litigation.
Okay.
Keep in mind also on the res ipsa theory, you know, that this court has said on several occasions that res ipsa is not a favored doctrine.
Does that raise the bar higher than that?
I'm sorry?
Does that raise the bar higher somehow?
Well, I think it's what the spin on that, Justice Gilbertson, is that res ipsa should only be used sparingly when the three elements are truly met, or when there's facts to support the three elements to support the doctrine of res ipsa.
What about Mr. Bridgman's statements or theories as to shifting burden of proof with res ipsa? Do you wish to address that at all?
Well, I don't think the burden is with the plaintiff to address, to establish. I think we'll even go back to the summary judgment standard for just a moment, Justice Severson, that the plaintiff has the burden to establish that there are genuine issues of material fact. And I understand I'm belaboring this point, but so then we go to element two of res ipsa. And that again establishes that this type of incident does not happen unless the person in control had not been negligent. So does that shift the burden to Derek to establish that he had not been negligent? I think that's best addressed by the fact that, again, this is not the type of event that occurs when only a party who has control has been negligent. I think I said that correctly, or I think I said that how I intended to say it. But the bottom line is, you don't get to res ipsa under these type of facts when there's a multitude of other potential causes for the underlying explosion. And that's why that's a doctrine that is not favored by this court. So we come back to the negligence cause of action. And what evidence is there? What evidence is there in this record that Derek Van Dyke was negligent and that negligence caused this explosion? What duty did he breach? This record is void of any such evidence. Mr. Bridgman uses the word inferences. Well, give me the benefit of a doubt. Give Ms. Cashman the benefit of a doubt. Let's have an inference. That's not the standard. They have to raise material to establish and show there's material issues of fact. It doesn't say inferences. And the two statements that are attributable to Derek, it blew up and I should have waited. That doesn't establish negligence. That doesn't establish a breach. Whatever Derek's father said, that's not transposed to Derek. Strict liability, this is not an abnormally dangerous activity. It's done all the time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Travers. Mr. Bridgman, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I'll try to touch on some of the things that Mr. Travis went through. A couple points I want to make is the trial court, Judge Erickson, said the fact is that the furnace did blow up and that Van Dyke lit it rather than calling or waiting for the serviceman. Mr. Travis indicates that we've met our burden in regard to element one of res ipsa and element three of res ipsa. He doesn't agree with issue number two, but Pellet would argue that he admitted that or conceded that. At the summary judgment hearing, page 7, Mr. Travis stated, Ms. Cashman contended that houses don't explode unless something is wrong. Well, we'll concede that. So there's been an admission by the attorney that element two has been met, that houses don't normally explode unless something is wrong. So, again, appellant believes that we have met all three areas of that burden of res ipsa.
All right. Well, Mr. Bridgman, Mr. Travis, I think today maybe if he didn't say it, he inferred that, yes, houses don't explode unless there's something wrong. But it's not something necessarily that's done by the owner that is wrong. Could be gas leak.
Exactly. And the thing is that something is wrong indicates that somebody has done something wrong. Something is wrong. Now, Mr. Travis argues that it could be the gas company, could be whoever built the house and put together, could be a leaky line. And that's exactly right. There could be other explanations, but that's speculation. The courts require us to provide evidence. There was no evidence submitted into the record that this was caused by a leaky gas line. There was no evidence submitted into the record that this was caused by a faulty furnace. So our argument is the inference is there that something is wrong, and we're entitled to that inference. And the defendant is required to meet that and provide evidence that something else happened that caused this. Not that it was Derek's fault, that it was somebody else's fault. And that's what we're saying. We should get the chance to submit that to the jury and let the jury decide that.
But doesn't the doctrine, though, require that the defendant against whom you're asking it to be applied, that common experience would tell us, that defendant did something negligent. Isn't that when the doctrine's intended to be applied?
Exactly, that there's an inference that Derek Van Dyke did something that was negligent.
But houses blow up. Common experience tells us again that houses blow up for lots of reasons other than the homeowner's negligence.
And if houses explode for a lot of other reasons than the homeowner's negligence, then the defendant has to provide evidence of that.
Isn't that the common experience element? Don't we look at, in applying the doctrine, isn't there a common experience component to that?
If I follow you, Justice Inter, the common experience is that houses don't explode unless something is wrong. Now I don't know if I'm getting that confused with common experience in the strict liability sense, because that's a different element in the strict liability sense, I would contend. Where the common experience in the res ipsa is that houses don't explode unless somebody did something wrong.
Similar question to what I asked Sir Travis. Is there any evidence in the record as to what someone would do in lighting a pilot light, common experience or whatever, to cause an explosion?
I don't believe there's a lot of evidence. There were warnings given to Derek by the gas company. And those were the standard warnings. If any of you have propane fireplaces or propane furnaces, the gas company will send out warnings. And in those warnings, it indicated that if you smell gas, you shouldn't light something, you should get out of the house. There were warnings such as if there's been an interruption of service, you should call the gas company and check into this. And there were some warnings that says, if you do light your pilot light, do this, this, and this. And so in regard to the warnings that the gas company gave, those are in the records. I don't believe in the depositions there was anything other than those warnings that the gas company gave as to how explosions could be created if somebody lit a furnace in certain situations. And, the 9:05, whether he lit it the evening before at 9:05 versus the 5:30 in the morning, I do think that's a relevant fact, and I think that is a fact in dispute. Mr. Travis indicated that we didn't contend that because we said that was that was his deposition testimony. That was his testimony. But we were challenging that fact because Derek's own admissions were that he lit it at 5:30 in the morning in conjunction with what happened. It blew up. I lit it. I should have waited. So the fact of the timing of this is important, plus the fact that Derek's dad confronts him and says, why did you do this? I told you to wait. And Derek's response is, I got cold. And so was it possible that he didn't light it at 9:05 the previous evening and that he got cold and decided to light it and it exploded at 5:30? That's a possibility. That's an inference that a jury could at least determine that this explosion occurred that morning. Just because a doctrine is, we don't use it much. I mean, I've read more on race ipsa than I have since law school, I think. But just because it's not used doesn't mean it's not used in the proper case. And I believe this is absolutely the proper case. All three elements have been met. It is said that the facts of the occurrence warrant the inference of negligence, not that they compel such an inference. They furnish circumstantial evidence of negligence where direct evidence of it may be lacking. It is lacking. We don't deny that. but it is evidence to be weighed, not necessarily to be accepted as such. And the Midwest Oil case goes on to say, the doctrine does not create an irrebuttable presumption in favor of the plaintiff. It simply warrants the inference of negligence. So this whole idea of shifting burdens of proof, I don't believe that the burden shifts, but I believe it is an inference of negligence that gets us beyond a summary judgment motion, that gets us in front of a jury. And the contention by the defendant that there are other things, the cases don't just say that you can speculate and say it could have been a gas leak, it could have been an alien, it could have been anything. There has to be evidence of what happens. There has to be evidence that it was caused by a gas leak. And the defendant failed to counter or present evidence that this was something other than Derek's negligence. So, Justices, I would ask that you reverse and remand this case. Marguerite Cashman should be allowed her day in court. She should be allowed to present this evidence to a court and let the jury decide whether they're going to accept the inference of negligence or whether they're going to accept whatever the defendant brings forth at trial to say that this was caused by something else. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bridger. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.